Yes, Lord.
Every Sunday, 7:30 a.m. to 8 a.m. on WVOX 1460 a.m. Join us. Worship with us. Listen to the message from Bishop Powell and Pastor Powell from Pentecostal House of Prayer, 94-15, 170th Street, Jamaica, Queens. Matthew 18:20 says,
"For where two or three are gathered together in my name, there am I in the midst of them."
Be in the midst. Join us.
And now with your latest up-to-date forecast, here's Steve Pelletieri's Eye on Weather, exclusively on WVOX Worldwide.
Our weather forecast for today, calling for sunshine. Temperatures for your Thursday in the mid-40s, northwest winds at 10 to 15. Mostly clear for this evening, partly cloudy overnight, down to 30 to 35. It'll be a cloudy day on Friday, expecting some rain in the afternoon. Could be a little bit of ice or freezing drizzle in the morning hours if it happens early enough. Temperatures only going into the mid-40s on Friday. Friday night looks like rain likely. Temperatures holding around 40 degrees. Then early shower Saturday, giving way to partial sunshine. Mid-50s Sunday, mostly cloudy, upper 50s. I'm meteorologist Steve Pelletieri for WVOX Worldwide, WVIP HD.
From the historic city of New Rochelle, home of Arlene Selman, County Legislator Jim Masano, Matthew O'Shaughnessy, and the Sound Shore Medical Center of Westchester, the great and growing hospital for you and yours.
Thank you for joining us on 1460 WVOX, America's great community radio station where many different voices are heard in the land. Opinions expressed on our community and open line programs are not necessarily those of the station, its management, or sponsors. As always, we're privileged to amplify the voice of the people here on Vox Populi 1460 and worldwide at WVOX.com for you and yours.
This is America's great community radio station.
Really seems to be in touch with the heartbeat of the city.
AM 1460 WVOX.
WVOX.
Good morning and welcome to Environmentally Sound. My voice is hoarse, you forgive me. I am Bob Levensold, your host for the series on the natural world, education, and culture, and chronicler of the demise of Homo sapiens. We bring you guests from diverse disciplines, scientists, activists, authors, educators, entertainers, and public officials. We seek to stimulate your curiosity, intellect, and passion. Today's news from the natural world. Today is Thursday, January 10th, 2013, the 21st day of winter. It's been a real winter so far, a little bit springy out there today. I've taken a respite from the real cold, and I will be off to Florida for a week on next Tuesday. So I'll take a big respite. I hope you all survive the winter without me. We have gained 1 minute of daylight since yesterday, 13 minutes since last we met 2 weeks ago. That's right, 13 minutes more daylight than it was 2 weeks ago. We are on the increase. Daylight will continue to increase every day until the summer solstice on June 21st. The sun rose at 7:19 this morning. It will set at 4:47 this evening. We will have 9 hours and 28 minutes of daylight today. The moon rose at 5:56 this morning. It will set at 3:51 tomorrow morning. We are 1 day short of new moon today. Next full moon is January 27th. As you know, new moon, you do not see the moon in the night sky because it's up in the day sky. Next equatorial event will be the vernal equinox, which will occur on March 20th when spring begins. We don't have tide information for you today, I'm sorry to say. Presumably few people are going out in boats and few people are going swimming, but I'd like to give them to you if I had them. I just don't. Now our regular feature, names of service members who have lost their lives at war. May they live on in all of our hearts. This week, we honor Private First Class Marky T. Sims, age 20, of Citra, Florida. He was with the 2nd Infantry Division, killed by a roadside bomb in Kandahar Province on December 29th. Now, PFC Sims is the only American service member reported to be killed in the 2 weeks since our last program, and I have mixed feelings about that. Of course, it is gratifying that the number killed since our last program is just one. On the other hand, Private First Class Sims was a 20-year-old who will be missed by his family. Each death is a great loss to all Americans. May they live forever in our hearts, and may this feature come to an end in the near future because there are no more deaths to report. Time for the Culture Corner. My reviews of plays, movies, opera, ballet, museums, and what have you. Keep in mind that these are my opinions, and you have the right to disagree with them because everyone has the right to be wrong. We saw the movie Zero Dark Thirty. This controversial movie chronicles the hunt for Osama bin Laden, or as they call him in the movie, UBL. I guess Usama is an alternate way of referring to him. I have no reason to believe that it all isn't true, although many have suggested that the CIA fed filmmaker Catherine Bigelow misinformation that torture, most notably waterboarding, was used effectively to track bin Laden down. Maybe they want to keep going with it as if we need that tool. Personally, I don't think we need that tool. I think it's unconscionable for Americans to torture. It's not for me to say. Perhaps Senate hearings will shed some light on the actual truth, but I think the story as told is accurate. It succeeds in suspense and action, and it's, I do believe, an accurate portrayal of events as they actually unfolded. The story is well told, well shot, well acted, and well directed, although we see that Ms. Bigelow did not receive an Oscar nomination for direction for some reason. Certainly, it portrays facts as I read them in the newspapers at the time. I do believe that waterboarding took place. I think that's pretty much accepted. And perhaps that such techniques did force some prisoners to give information. But I also believe that it is not necessary to torture in order to gain intelligence. And in any case, it is not the image of America that we need to practice. If the subject interests you, you will not be disappointed. Very likely to be nominated for Oscars. I said that when I wrote this last night, found out this morning it was, of course, nominated for Oscars in several categories. Of course, it's violent, but no gratuitous or unnecessary gore. This is a serious film. The effects support and further the story. It's a heroic film if you look at the Navy SEALs as American heroes, as I do. I recommend this movie. My guest today is David Quammen, author of several books, most recently 2012's Spillover. This book is part solving mysteries, part warning for the future, and part a very well-written, engaging, and interesting read. In fact, the New York Times, when they spoke about David Quammen and this book in their review, compared him to Faulkner. Now that's pretty complimentary for someone who's not primarily a novel writer, although I believe he's written four novels. So it's part solving mysteries, part warning for the future, and just very interesting. From time to time, a book comes along which transcends its message and is enjoyable unto itself just for the reading and the writing. Spillover is such a book. Speaking to us from Bozeman, Montana, welcome, David Quammen.
Thanks, Bob. Very good to be with you this morning.
Good morning. It's great to be with you, too. How's the weather in Montana this morning? Are you wintry or what?
We are wintry. We've got snow on the ground still this morning, although we're waiting for some fresh snow.
So fresh snow is predicted.
I was supposed to come in the mountains last night. We don't have any in the yard down here in town, but we're hoping for it. We like snow out here.
You like snow. You have snowmobiles and ways to get around.
Well, I've got about five pairs of skis.
Cool. Very cool. Your book is called Spillover. It's about the transmission of, not just the transmission of, but the jump from animals to humans. Why don't you just define spillover for us?
Yeah, well, as I say, it's a book about scary new emerging diseases and where they emerge from. And where they emerge from, generally, these new diseases, is from other species, from animals, particularly from wildlife. And the title is Spillover because that term describes the event when a disease of any sort spills from one species into another, when it makes the transfer from, say, a monkey or a chimpanzee or a rodent into, particularly of interest to us, into humans. It's a book that describes this phenomenon and goes into the dynamics of it and tells a lot of stories about different cases and then looks at the larger picture.
Okay, so it doesn't really refer to getting bit by a rabid dog and catching rabies, because rabies is already established. It refers to the actual first time that the disease is experienced in humans. Is that correct?
That's right, yeah. And this is a phenomenon that's been around for a long time. As you mentioned, rabies is, well, the name for these diseases that spill from wildlife into humans is zoonoses, zoonotic diseases, as in zoology and zoo, etc. These zoonotic diseases have been around for a long time, some of them. The influenzas are all zoonotic diseases. Rabies, as you mentioned, is a zoonotic disease. Bubonic plague was a zoonotic disease.
And, of course, AIDS.
And, of course, AIDS, although that's a little bit less well-known. But, yeah, AIDS originally spilled over from chimpanzees into humans.
So, actually, from one chimpanzee to one man in 1908. Is that correct?
In 1908 or earlier, give or take a margin of error, yeah, there's very, very good molecular genetic work that's been done just in the last 4 or 5 years that has now revealed to us that the original spillover of the pandemic strain of HIV passed from one chimpanzee into one human in the southeastern corner of Cameroon in Central Africa as early as 1908, give or take a margin of error.
So do we imagine that he ate this chimpanzee or the chimpanzee bit him? How did the transmission actually take place, or don't we know that?
We don't know that, but what we suspect is that a human killed and butchered a chimpanzee and probably cut himself in the course of doing that and got blood-to-blood contact, chimpanzee blood into a cut on his hand. This is even referred to as the cut hunter hypothesis.
Interesting.
But it's only a hypothesis because that part of the story is essentially unknowable.
And as we know about AIDS, it is transmitted either through blood or semen contact, basically. Or
that's right, bodily fluids. Yeah, blood-to-blood contact or yes.
Okay, now your book starts with the story about the spillover of the Hendra virus from bats to racehorses to humans in Australia, and then the hunt for its cause. This virus wasn't one of the most deadly or dangerous of disease-causing pathogens, and it actually killed more horses. It didn't kill a lot of humans, but it did reach human population. So this is an interesting example of how spillover works. Tell us this story.
And I begin with Hendra because it's a very small case, but it's a textbook case of how this phenomenon occurs. As you mentioned, 1994, racehorses in a stables in a suburb called Hendra, H-E-N-D-R-A, a suburb of Brisbane, Australia, racehorses started getting sick with these horrible symptoms, foaming at the mouth, faces swelling up, clumsiness flowing down, high fevers, eventually dying. First it was one racehorse, and they thought that maybe this racehorse had gotten into some poisoned fodder, some toxic weeds or something like that out in a pasture. And that racehorse died, and they didn't know what had happened. And then about 10 days later, the rest of the horses in that stables came down with the same kind of ailment. One by one, they went down like dominoes with these horrible symptoms and started dying. And there were three men.
David, let's just hold that thought. We have to take a quick break. We'll be back with you in just a minute. You're listening to WVOX AM 1460 in New Rochelle, New York. If you are listening in Beaver, Buttermilk, Cuba, Denmark, or Cawker City, Kansas, Denmark, Kansas, or Copenhagen, Denmark, Holland, Kansas, or Scheveningen, Holland, you have logged on to www.wvox.com. You are listening live. My guest is David Quammen, and we will be right back.
With world and national news 3 times an hour, here's the latest update from Fox News Radio on WVOX Worldwide.
Fox News Radio, I'm Lillian Wu. Boston declares a public health emergency as the flu season takes a deadly turn.
There have been 18 deaths across the state. 4 of those deaths have been in Boston. We've been told that those were mostly older people. That compares to just 1 death in all of the flu season last year here in the city.
Fox's Molly Line, its mayor declaring free flu clinics will be offered all day tomorrow. Lincoln is in the lead for Oscar nominations, racking up 12.
Blood's been spilled to afford us this moment now.
The Civil War saga is also up for Best Picture, along with Beasts of the Southern Wild, Silver Linings Playbook, Zero Dark Thirty, Les Miserables, Amour, Django Unchained, Argo, and Life of Pi, which is nominated for 11 Oscars.
Fox Radio, Sabrina Sabah. And the latest jobs report showing that the market is slowly improving. First-time claims last week up slightly to 371,000. Fox News, we report, you decide.
Now in Westchester, for corporate travel, executive transportation, and custom limousine service, the leader, clearly, is Excel. After 2 decades in the county, Rich Guberti's Excel Transportation Service does just that. Specializing in sedans, limos, and 14-passenger vans, Excel is the new class of the fleet and the Westchester leader in terms of cars, service, resources, and the quality of their Excel drivers. Most of the Golden Apple's blue-chip companies have, in fact, in recent years, switched to Excel. Rochelle for local transportation and city-to-city service to Washington, Albany, Baltimore, Hartford, Boston, and Philadelphia at rates even less than rail or air. And you can use them too for a trip into town, the airport, or any special occasion. Call President Rich Guberti at Excel Headquarters, EXCEL Transportation, 576-9797, 914-576-9797. These days in Westchester, the new car service leader, because Excel excels. 576-9797.
Hi, I'm Rob Baker.
And I'm Ed Iannacone, and we are the Financial Forum.
We are the Baker Iannacone Financial Group, Senior Vice Presidents of Investments with Wells Fargo Advisors.
Every morning, Monday through Friday, from 10 to 10:30, join us for a half hour of financial common sense.
You know, during the show, we'll recap what happened yesterday in the markets. We'll look at what might be affecting the markets today.
And we always have a topic of the day that'll educate and help you continually sharpen your financial skills.
So grab your coffee
or your tea,
kick up your feet, and enjoy some scintillating conversation.
The Financial Forum, every morning, Monday through Friday, from 10 to 10:30.
Here on 1460 WVOX and WVOX.com.
This is the authentic voice of the people.
It's a community station.
AM 1460 WVOX.
WVOX.
We are back. This is Environmental Sound. I am Bob Levinson. My guest is David Quammen. David, we're talking about the transmission of the Hendra virus, which happened in 1994, I think you said, a suburb of Brisbane, Australia. It was not so deadly, but it is a classic textbook case of how diseases travel.
That's right. And I was mentioning that this whole series of racehorses got sick and started dying of a mysterious ailment. And then two of the men who were taking care of them, the horse trainer and a stable hand, got sick too. The horse trainer went into the hospital and eventually died. And they found in him a new virus that they named Hendra virus, found the same virus in the horses. So then they realized this was the emergence of a new virus. It had somehow gotten into the horses, killed them, and then from the horses into the men. And a bit of detective work backtracking from that point eventually found this virus living in bats, fruit bats of that part of Australia. So it had apparently dripped out of the fruit bats or been defecated and urinated out, gotten onto grass in a pasture where the horses picked it up when they ate the grass.
Okay, the book is Spillover. The man is David Quammen. Fascinating read, and of course the information is pure science, pure medicine, pure research, pure epidemiology, and just it's a great book to read. Spillover by David Quammen out of the Norton House, published in 2012. human behavior has been indicted in the increase in spillover diseases. How has overfishing, rainforest destruction, mining, consumption of bushmeat, a population of 7 billion worldwide, how has human activity increased this phenomenon?
Well, Bob, it can be put in two words, disruption and connectivity. Those are the factors that make this more of a problem now than ever before. Disruption refers to the fact that, as you said, we are disrupting wild ecosystems. We are cutting our way through the Amazon, cutting our way through the Congo Basin, harvesting timber, building settlements, building timber camps, eating the wildlife there, doing all sorts of disruption in natural habitats where a high diversity of animals live. And because there's a high diversity of animals, there's a high diversity of viruses and other pathogens naturally carried by those animals. When we disrupt those ecosystems and come in contact with those animals, it offers an opportunity for those viruses to spill into us. So that's what's happening. And then the second factor is connectivity. We're traveling around the world more quickly and more abundantly than ever before. We're shipping and transporting products and animals around the world. So once a new virus gets into the human population, as the SARS virus did in 2003 in southern China, it has a very, very dangerous opportunity to spread widely through the 7 billion humans that occupy the planet.
Well, and yet there are still many diseases that we've never heard of, or if we've heard of, we're not worried about them. Let's just take Ebola, which is a terrible virus. How come that hasn't jumped the plane and come to America yet?
Right. Ebola lives in some animal in Central Africa, in the forests of Central Africa. We still don't know which animal. The animal in which these things live is called the reservoir host, and the reservoir host of Ebola still hasn't been identified. But every so often, every couple of years, it somehow spills over from that reservoir host and gets into humans. Generally, it kills dozens or hundreds of people, typically in the countryside, in the villages of Central Africa. It causes severe fevers. It causes some bleeding, although not as much bleeding as some of the more exaggerated accounts have suggested. But it does kill 60 or 70% of the people that it infects. But it kills them so quickly, and it transmits from human to human in such a way, only by bodily fluids and not airborne, not through the air, that it doesn't travel from Central Africa to the rest of the world very well. In fact, there is only one known case of a human with an active Ebola infection having left the continent of Africa, and that was a woman who was medically evacuated after she got sick during she was a Swiss veterinarian, and she did an autopsy on a chimpanzee that had died. She picked up Ebola. She was medically evacuated to Switzerland. That's the only time Ebola has left the continent of Africa, so far as we know, in a human body.
So do we know then that, you said we don't know what the reservoir is. Is it not suggested that it's chimps then?
No, because it kills chimps. It kills gorillas, it kills chimps, and whatever the reservoir is has to be an animal that can carry it sort of chronically without showing symptoms, without getting sick.
So they're just carriers. They're not affected by it.
Yeah, well, that's right. Yeah, exactly.
Oh, interesting.
And so they suspect that it might be a species of bat, but they haven't proven that yet. Bats are the reservoirs of a number of these new viruses. With Ebola, it is suspected but has not yet been established.
And you said from time to time there are new spillovers of Ebola. Does that mean that each time it becomes extinct in the human population until it spills back over? Or
that's right, yeah, exactly.
So it's not living in the human
population. They call humans a dead-end host.
Oh, interesting.
So far, there have been Ebola outbreaks, but they come to an end. They either come to an end because they die out naturally. People protect themselves and essentially back off from the sick individuals, or modern barrier nursing measures are brought in, simply things like rubber gloves, gowns, and masks, and the outbreak then is stopped. So in those cases, they say it comes to a dead end. You know, it's horrible if it kills 300 people, but better that than an outbreak that spreads across the world. And in each case, it's a new spillover when it passes from an animal into the first human on the way to passing from one human to another.
How interesting. So tell us now, we know well about influenza. We know it's not just a nuisance disease. We say, oh, I got the flu, I'll stay out of work a few days. But people do forget that back in 1918, it killed 50 million people worldwide. So it's not
right.
Just a nuisance disease. But why do we need a different flu shot every year? I mean, I had chicken pox and measles, whatever I got when I was a kid, whooping cough, and once is supposed to be forever. How come we need a different flu shot every
right.
year?
Well, and you're right that, you know, people tend to take influenza for granted, but I just heard on your newscast an influenza emergency in Massachusetts. What did they say? 18 people have died this year?
Uh-huh.
Now, the reason we need a new flu shot each year is because the influenza viruses evolve very quickly. They change very quickly, so they're constantly changing. They emerge each year from wild aquatic birds, and they get into poultry. Usually this happens in southern Asia, where there are a lot of chickens and ducks that are kept in close proximity to people. So the virus passes from a wild bird into a domesticated bird, from a domesticated bird into a human, and then from human to human. And the dangerous thing about influenza is that it does travel through the air. It'll travel on a sneeze. It'll travel on a cough.
So
but the fact that it's constantly evolving means that last year's flu vaccine protected us against last year's influenza virus, but this year there's a new virus, a new influenza coming out of the East, and we need a slightly different vaccine to protect us against that.
Because they're constantly evolving and changing.
Right.
Huh. I had a question and it just slipped my mind. Mankind's activities are causing this is a quote from your book. Mankind's activities are causing the disintegration of natural ecosystems at a cataclysmic rate. Cataclysmic rate means it's going to do devastating damage. What do you mean by that, and what does that bode for the future?
Well, as I said, we're disrupting the last remaining really biologically diverse wild ecosystems in the Central African forests, in the Amazon, in Southeastern Asia, around the world. And the more we disrupt those, I say somewhere else in the book that when you shake a tree, things fall out. And that's a metaphor, but it's also, in a sense, literally true. As we cut down these forests, as we disturb these ecosystems, we come in contact with lots and lots of different kinds of species. And scientists have estimated that every one of these different species of bird, of bat, of rodent, of small mammal, and various different sorts, probably is carrying at least one form of unique virus. And coming into close contact with them represents an opportunity for those viruses to transfer from their customary host into a different host, namely this thing called humans. And if they do that and succeed in adapting to us, in replicating within us and finding they can transmit from one human to another, then, as I said, this vast door has opened, this door of possibilities, because there are 7 billion of us around the world, and we are closely interconnected because of living in dense populations and traveling so much.
So what we're doing is we're disrupting the dust. I think you use a warehouse metaphor in there where the dust
That's right.
Fly.
Yeah, I say that too. Yeah, you demolish one of these forests and
everything flies all over the place.
Rise like dust from a demolished warehouse.
Yeah, but it's also a Pandora's box, we can say.
That's right, sure.
Or a hornet's nest. We are messing with the natural world, which has evolved over millennia, has been here much longer than us, and I suspect it knows how to deal with us.
Absolutely. And another thing I should say is that when a virus lives in its reservoir host, it's been there for a long time, it's reached a sort of an accommodation, probably it is competing not just with the immune system of that species, but also with other viruses, other pathogens, other bacteria. It lives within an ecosystem in that animal, in that host. If it spills over into humans, it's like an invasive species, like
right.
The zebra mussel
or
the brown rat, yes, getting into a new ecosystem and
it
being
can run
able
wild
to
and kill the local indigenous
exactly
wildlife.
Yep.
Interesting,
yeah.
David. I'm afraid we're out of time, but it's been fascinating, and I'd like to do this again sometime.
I'd love it, Bob. I enjoyed talking with you.
Great, my pleasure. Thank you so much.
You bet. Bye bye.
Bye. I'd like to thank David Quammen for taking the time to speak with us this morning. David has traveled the world over to some very dangerous places, and he's brought back fascinating insights into the natural world and mankind's influence on it. We are all better for the risks he takes in the interest of science. Our thought for the week: the future is neither inevitable nor predictable. Stay tuned to WVOX, your quintessential community radio station, the flagship of Whitney Radio, the best small station in the U.S. of A., perhaps the world. Next up, Sturman! Thanks to Bill O'Shaughnessy and Don Stevens. I am Bob Lebensold, chronicler of the demise of Homo sapiens. Thank you very much for listening. Remember to be kind, for everyone you meet is fighting a great battle. You are here. It is now. Health and happiness to you all.